Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
This is a special all questions answered edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And as promised, for helping us reach the pledge drive goal during our On Your Money broadcast during our winter pledge drive, we are devoting the entire hour to answering your questions for financial planner Kevin McKinley. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
What a wonderful bunch of listeners we have here at Wisconsin Public Radio. It was a great week for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to the many generous listeners who pledged during our On Your Money broadcasts. 721 pledges came in for the three broadcasts.
Wow.
Kevin, what do you say to that?
Well, I think we may be in the rare air of public radio that we actually have more pledgers than we do listeners.
How does that happen?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but thank you to all of you. I appreciate it. If you can't stand the show, that's fine. Just keep sending money.
Well, it's wonderful. I think that the generous support from our On Your Money listeners helped Wisconsin Public Radio overall exceed the goal for the winter pledge drive. So thank you so very much for supporting the programming that you value and paying for these programs. And we promised a special thank you, right?
That's correct. For because all of you who pledged not only received the copy of the On Your Money Mini Money Booklet, Retire Early and Forever. Apparently, there are lots of people out there who are looking to retire sooner rather than later and then looking to remain retired. We not only are going to send that out to you, I think most of you probably received it, but we are going to devote this entire hour to answering your questions, ones you've sent in by email previously or during the show if we can. You can call in now if you'd like. Even if we don't get to your call right now, send in an email later on, and we will hopefully use it during a show in the future.
Let's start with an email from a grateful listener whose question you answered. Carrie says, I really appreciate the public service you are providing and the way in which you do it. I want to bake you a pie or something. That's so nice. I don't really see how that's feasible, so instead I sent a token of thanks by calling in a pledge to WPR. Aw, even though this isn't my normal pledge time, it's in the fall.
Hmm.
So what kind of pie do you still want, Kevin?
I'm an apple man myself, and there are instructions out there on the web how you can actually attach a pie file to an email, Carrie, and send it in to onyourmoney@wpr.org if you get a chance. Hopefully the filters won't grab it, but if it gets to me, I'll be even more appreciative.
Kevin McKinley likes apple pie, and he is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through these broadcasts and does not represent that the securities or services that we discuss are suitable for any or every investor. Investors should consult with their financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. Now, if you have a question for Kevin on a money matter, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Let's take our first caller, William in West Milwaukee. Hello, William. You're on the air.
Hello, Ben. I'm a renter for many decades here. I'm considering purchasing a home. I'm wondering, what are the extra costs involved beyond the mortgage when you purchase a home? And if there's a general ballpark formula, say, figure twice the mortgage or half the mortgage more for cost of owning the home?
That's an excellent question, William. Let me ask you this first. What is your motivation for doing it? Is it psychological, emotional, or is it financial?
All three.
Okay.
I'm sick of renting, sick of putting up with the renters, and gone through four landlords where I live now. And part of it's psychological. I want some peace and quiet, and then financial also, because I'm not investing my money for myself. I'm giving it to the landlord. So
sure, I would actually I would lean toward your first two reasons for buying a house as more I don't want to use the word legitimate, but more reasonable than the third one. And because there's this notion that you buy a house and you pay down the mortgage and you build up your equity, and then at some point you sell the house or you move on to another one if you'd want. And while that's certainly true on paper, what most homeowners will vouch for, me included, is that the mortgage and to a lesser extent the property taxes are certainly an expense, but that's not even the worst part of the expenses. It's the ongoing upkeep and maintenance of the house, the new roof, the furnace goes wrong, oh, the kitchen hasn't been done in 35 years, we better do it before we die. And those expenses generally can run at a minimum probably 5 to 10% per year of the value of the home. So if you have a $200,000 home, those maintenance and upgrading expenses can probably run you about $10,000 to $20,000 per year, depending on the year. Some years you can get by without paying anything. Other years there you might have to spend twice that amount, especially if you have a really big project like a new roof on a bigger home, or you want to redo a kitchen. That's where the big expenses come in. Now, there is some satisfaction to the privacy part of it. I do like the notion of building up the equity that you can tap down the road. But on a pure financial basis, most of us would probably be better off just renting. And one thing I would say is maybe go halfway between what you're doing or now and what you're thinking about doing. It's trying to find a nicer, more expensive place to rent, and you'll actually probably save more money in the long run. But if you're really going to, dumber people than you have bought houses and managed to survive and enjoy it quite a bit, but just get ready for a big bunch of unexpected expenses and make sure you keep a good pot of money set aside to cover those.
Okay, William?
Does that 5 or 10% include the ongoing expenses such as property taxes and insurance?
No, sadly it doesn't. You usually, the cost of renting per square foot versus the cost of the mortgage and the property taxes usually is a wash, and especially if you're looking at a condo or something like that. But if you say, well, I'm worried more about the actual expenses part of it, you can expect to spend probably 5 to 10% of the value per year in maintenance, and that also includes things like lawn care, snow removal. That's just an ongoing litany of expenses that keep the home renovation and maintenance industry rolling.
Yeah, and ice dams in the winter and flooding in the spring. So.
That's right. The good thing is that it'll never happen again, right?
I hope not. Right. William, good luck to you. Happy house hunting, if that's what you choose to do. Let's take another call from Adam in La Crosse. Hi, Adam.
I'm a big fan. I moved to Minnesota, and I'm driving through Wisconsin, so I'm happy to be on the air with you, Dan.
Are you just driving through Wisconsin so that you can hear the show, Adam?
Yes, that's
okay. Good enough.
I just wanted to call. My wife has stock that she's received from her company, and
unfortunately, he drove out of range. Adam, are you there? I think so. Oh no. I don't really know if there. I guess there's no way to really. Should he cash in that stock to pay off debt? Was the general.
That's
question.
What he wants to know.
Yeah.
It depends on the expected rate of return of the stock versus the interest cost of the debt, and also. It sounded like if his wife had the stock from a company, the stock might be in a retirement plan. And I'm actually a big fan of selling stock and investments to pay debt off, in part because most debt has an interest rate that is fixed and guaranteed, and especially consumer loans and credit cards have a higher interest rate than what I think the stock market or stocks in general are going to return over the next how many ever years. So if you're paying 12% on a credit card and you have a stock mutual fund or whatever, you may be better off selling the mutual fund and paying off the interest and the principal of the credit card, because you'll save yourself 12% per year. And it's unlikely that that mutual fund will make that amount of money. The only time I say to watch out for that is if you're pulling it out of a retirement account, that, and especially if you're under the age of 59 and a half, because not only will you pay taxes on the balance, but you'll also pay penalties on it as well. If that's the case, then you're better off just paying it off as quickly as you can, but not cashing out of retirement accounts to do so.
We'll go next to Mary in Appleton. Hello, Mary. What's your question?
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin. I'm in my late 50s, and I've had a number of different jobs over the years. And in each job, I've gotten some kind of a retirement account. So I've got a 403B, a couple of those. Right now, I've got a 401K. I've got an IRA. I've got a stock mutual fund. And I've got I set up an annuity program with some bunches, and I'm just concerned about all these little pieces everywhere, and whether it's a smart idea maybe to, if I can combine them and just move some into something else, or if that would be something that would be not tax beneficial. Particularly, I'm wondering if I can get rid of that IRA, or if I can move that IRA into. Maybe one of the other ones I'm concerned because all the other ones are pre-tax, and the IRA is after tax. I already paid taxes on the money and so I'm just kind of wondering about implications of moving things together instead of having little pockets everywhere.
Sure. Is the after-tax IRA actually an after-tax IRA, or is it a Roth IRA?
It's not a Roth.
Okay. All right, the after-tax IRAs, just for other people who haven't used them, are where you put contributions into an IRA. You don't get a tax deduction on the contribution, but the earnings are sheltered from taxes. And then when you pull the money out, there's a very complex formula that you can use that can allow you to pull the contribution portion of the IRA out in retirement, not pay taxes on. I don't recommend them. And I don't recommend, if you're using it now, Mary, that you continue to do it. And definitely, if you are okay putting these computations in place in retirement, do not mingle that IRA with your other retirement accounts. Keep that after-tax one separate, because that will give you a chance to maybe track those withdrawals a little better, and also it's legally it's required to do that as well. In terms of the other accounts, I'm definitely a big fan of consolidating accounts wherever possible. You just have to watch out for a couple of things. One is that pulling money out of the current accounts and moving it into another one doesn't incur any major fees. And by major fees, I mean like surrender charges on mutual funds or annuities, which can be anywhere from 3 to 10% of the value. There might be some account closing fees of maybe like $50 to $100. Sometimes the new receiving institution will reimburse you for those fees if you point it out to them that you incurred them to start doing business with them. And then also make sure that the accounts are a trustee-to-trustee transaction, meaning you never take over the ownership of the assets, that it goes from one institution to another electronically. And how you do that is you usually set up the account at the other place, and then you have them initiate the transfer from the place you want the money to come from. And I'd recommend you do that if you can find a financial advisor whom you like, that's great. If you find a credit union or a bank that you're comfortable with, or you can use one of the big nationwide companies like Fidelity or Schwab or Vanguard or TD Ameritrade is another one that a lot of people like. TI Cref is one some people use and like as well. Contact them. I guarantee you, no matter how confusing the whole situation seems to you, this is all they do for a living, and so they should know exactly how to handle it once you state what you want to happen.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. And this is a special all questions answered edition of On Your Money. We promised if we reached our pledge drive goal during On Your Money, we would devote the entire hour to answering your questions. You did, and we are. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
well, I'd buy you a house.
I would buy you a house.
This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, thanking you for your support. You're Worth $1 Million. We are answering your questions all hour long. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Or I should say Kevin's answering your questions. Clyde in Denmark is with us next. Hi, Clyde. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have a couple things on health insurance here. For one thing, I was on the high-risk pool through the state and working with an insurance person here. I got very similar insurance for about $300 a quarter less than what I had been paying through the high-risk pool. But what I really called about was this insurance person also informed me about what's called a health savings account. And I was confused because I remember I had one years ago at work that was called a health savings account. But this is apparently a different thing that you can put in up to $4,300 a year and not pay taxes on that income. I went to the bank, and they said, yes, they could set one of those up for me, and they'd even pay me a little interest. But they also wondered if I wanted to get one from last year, because apparently I have time till this year's taxes to do that. So if you could kind of go through what these health savings accounts are and what the tax implications are, and also on withdrawal of funds from those and tax implications there.
What's the deal on that, Kevin? Uh-oh. Did we lose Kevin?
No, I'm here. Okay. I just took a brief nap here.
Because of Brian's long question.
No, it's a great question, and I really enjoy the subject of health savings accounts. It's complex, but they can be really neat tools if used properly. Health savings account are more commonly known as HSAs, and they're combined with high-deductible healthcare plans. And what happens is exactly as Clyde said, you make a deposit that's tax-deductible into the plan and into the account, and then you can pull the money out tax-free to spend basically on your deductible as part of the plan. There are some other miscellaneous healthcare expenses that qualify as well. It's not a use-it-or-lose-it program like FSAs, flexible spending accounts, are, meaning that your HSA balance, if it's unused during a particular year, it rolls over from one year to the next. And then basically in retirement, you can either pull it out tax-free to spend on other qualified medical expenses, or it just becomes like an IRA, meaning you pull the money out and you pay taxes on it as ordinary income. But if it's after 65, there are no penalties on the distributions, just taxes. I think it's very possible that William could take advantage of this. I like that the bank suggested he look at one for last year, but it's only available for last year if you had a health insurance plan, Clyde, that had a high deductible component to it, meaning not all health insurance plans allow you to use an HSA with it. So check with the provider of your other plan and say, is it possible for me to make a deduction to an HSA for this plan? And like IRAs and Roth IRAs, you can actually make a contribution to these plans retroactively for the prior tax year and still get a tax break on it.
Thanks for the question, Clyde. Dana, in an email, asks, I have a traditional IRA that has just reached maturity. The bank it is currently with is offering 1.4% interest. I found a CD paying 2.12%. with Everbank. Do you know anything about this institution? Do I tell the current bank to write me a check for the amount, or do I ask them to wire the amount to the new bank? I'm not sure how this works, given it's an online transaction. Thank you. So what advice do you have for Dana, Kevin?
Let's start with the institution. Everbank is basically an online bank, and most financial institutions have some online component, but several have the majority or all of their businesses conducted online. That doesn't make it necessarily bad or worrisome, but it just means that some people have to become more accustomed to wiring money from one place to the other and dealing with statements online versus getting them in the mail. The most important thing to watch is the FDIC insurance. You want to make sure that any dollar amount you put into an online bank or a physical presence bank is FDIC insured, or in the case of a credit union, it's called NCUA insurance, and they're both equally important and equally strong. Watch the fees and terms. Many times, banks that offer these higher rate CDs say, well, we'll give you X amount of interest on this, but there is a $50 fee to open the account, and then there's a $100 fee to keep it open, and then there's a $200 fee to close the account, or you have to keep other certain accounts in place with us to get this higher interest rate. And once you add up all the fees, you'll find that unless you have a huge amount of money in there, that the fees offset any little interest gain you get from the offering bank. And then also, we've seen this sometimes in the past where we hunt around a lot for our clients to find CDs at other banks throughout the country, and credit unions for that matter. And sometimes they just say, nope, here's the CD, we're offering it, great, move the money in there. But several times we've run into a problem where banks, physical and online, have said, here's a really great interest rate on a CD. And hey, oh, by the way, you know what? If you're interested in a fixed rate annuity or some other kind of product instead, that actually pays a higher interest rate. So keep an eye on the bait and switch. Make sure you only purchase or deposit what you've actually intended to buy.
Mm-hmm. So how should this transfer take place?
It, like the switching the IRAs, it usually starts on the receiving end. She should open an account at the new institution, and then they will initiate the transfer of funds from the old institution. There'll be plenty of forms to sign and signatures on Dana's part, but it will all happen online and electronically. And as long as it goes from one IRA to another, again, one custodian to another, there will be no taxes or penalties whatsoever on the transfer.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner, and this is an all questions answered edition of On Your Money. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Next we go to Janet in Platteville. Hello, Janet, how are you?
I am fine, thank you. I have a question about tax form 5329. I already had my taxes done and I did not see that page when they got done. They have my interest from my traditional IRA and interest from my Roth RIA on that page under parts 3 and parts 4. And because of what it says above that, I thought that was a mistake, so I wanted to check it out.
Do you know what triggered the 5329 form?
The guy just made it out.
Okay.
The only income I have is Social Security right now. I'm not taking anything out of any of my investments.
Okay.
So other than my interest on my CDs and such, and that's all I have, and I'm not taking that interest out of that, the CDs either.
And Kevin, I'm a little confused. What usually triggers that 5329?
The 5329 is a form that covers if you took money out of a retirement plan early and need to pay a penalty on it, or if you put in too much money or any money at all into an IRA or a Roth IRA, you weren't allowed to it. And I'm guessing that's what happened here. Did you make a contribution, Janet, to an IRA or Roth IRA in a previous year?
No. My the traditional IRA was a rollover from my 401k at work. And that was done, it says event date 5/14/2012. But it was rolled over directly to the bank when I set up the IRA.
Okay. What about, were you supposed to take a required minimum distribution from any of these accounts in 2013?
Not that's set up to be taken out at the end of this year.
Okay. Somewhere, what about a health savings account? Do you have one of those?
No.
Okay. How about a cat? Do you have a cat, Janet?
No.
Okay.
I'm just probing. They're great.
I'm just probing here. Did you ask the guy why you have a 5329?
No, I didn't. I did ask him why I had to pay this year, which I hadn't last year, and that apparently is because of those two amounts. But just when we were getting done, he left to help someone else. I had to run to the bathroom. When I came back, he was giving me my stuff, and of course I just walked out.
Sure. Well, one thing I'd recommend for people who are in this situation, especially, did you go to like an H&R Block or someplace like that?
No, it was the local AARP.
Oh, okay. That fine. Actually, yeah. They do a pretty good job, especially if it's what you pay. But if you are going to be waiting in line at any time, please, wear adult diapers because you don't want to lose your place in line, and then you have a tax problem.
Well, I actually wasn't in line. My chair was there vacant until I came back. He just got up and moved away, and I ran and told them I was coming right back. And
okay. Do you have someone else who like a CPA whom you know in your area who could answer the question for you?
Well, my thought was if you didn't answer the question, then I would just call and make an appointment and ask him if I can come back.
That's what I would do, and try not to drink so much coffee next time before you go in. But it's confusing to me because based on the situation, what I think happened is for some reason there was an RMD, a required minimum distribution, that was supposed to be taken from the accounts in 2013 and wasn't. But I could be wrong on that. My guess and hope is that the very well-meaning, very harried assistant volunteer preparer at the ARP station did not grasp the situation and put in that you were supposed to take some kind of distribution, and you did not. Another thing you might want to do, Janet, is try a program like TurboTax. That might cost you maybe $50 or $60. It is online, but they will ask a lot of questions, even that that an individual doesn't know or can't remember or apply to your situation. And if you do your taxes that way, it might help you solve this conundrum.
Thank you so much, Janet, for the call. I hope you can get that figured out. I have an email from a talk show host who wants to know.
No, Jay Leno? Oh, wait, he's not a talk show host.
You brought up TurboTax, and I know we provided information on doing taxes yourself or selecting a tax preparer during tax time in previous programs. And I'm considering, Kevin, I think I'm going to switch. I have had a preparer do my taxes for the past 25 years or more, only because I just didn't want the hassle, and I didn't mind paying someone to do it for me. We don't have a particularly complicated tax situation. We have a deduction for mortgage and charitable contributions, and that's it. And I'm going to maybe for the first time ever do this TurboTax. And people are giving me advice as to which one is better or which one they use. Do you think they're all pretty much the same, those online things?
I like TurboTax better than the others. It's more intuitive, and they do a better job, in my opinion, of asking you questions about your situation, following up much like hopefully a tax preparer or CPA would. And for what you pay, for what you get, it probably is a better deal than going to an individual. If you want more tax planning issues, you definitely want to use a CPA and pay the extra money. But that can cost anywhere from $500 to $5,000 a year, depending on the complexity of your situation. And so if you're willing to do it and you say, no, I usually just hand this stuff in to a tax preparer, they spit back what I owe or what I get in a refund, and we go from there. TurboTax is a good one. I don't have any axe to grind with the other ones or any interest in TurboTax, but I like it better than the other ones.
Mm-hmm. It's good to know. And even somebody who doesn't do a lot of forms and numbers can do something like that on TurboTax.
Absolutely.
All right. Good. Let's go back to the phones. Shiv in Brookfield is with us. Hi, Shiv.
Hi, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, how are you?
I had a quick, good, great, great. I had a quick question, two-part question, actually. So, firstly, I'm 28 years old, and me and my wife, we filed taxes jointly, and last night we just opened up our first Roth IRA account.
Great.
Now, my question is, thanks. My question is, I know in the next 5 to 6 years, we will not be eligible income-wise to put any money in the Roth IRA. The first question was, how do I figure out how much of that, what that will become, that money, as far as when I retire, let's say 65 or something like that? I was not able to find any online calculators or anything that does that. And the second part of the question was, once I'm ineligible to put money into the Roth IRA, should I roll that over into something else or just leave that until you retire and take it out? Thanks.
Yeah, good questions. And just the first one is, there are, if you go to, we mentioned a couple of places last week, but dinkytown.net has lots of calculators that you can use to put in a hypothetical rate of return and a balance in an age that you're at right now. And then there's another one at Calc XML. If you go to onyourmoney.com right now, you'll actually see both of those websites on the front page, because we put our websites of the week up at onyourmoney.com each week. So go to those, and those will give you some calculators and kind of let you know what the variable is. And of course, you have to guess what the rate of return is. If it's in stocks and you're willing to take some risk, I guess I would use a hypothetical return of 5 or 6%. And if you're more conservative than that, you probably want to use maybe 2 or 3% for fixed accounts. As to the second one, no, you shouldn't do anything else with that money. You don't need to roll it over. You can just leave it there. And at some point, you may even want to convert some of your tax-deferred savings accounts to Roth IRAs if you think you are going to be in a lower tax bracket. Sometimes, if you're still working, that might mean because you have a business loss or you're laid off from a job or whatever. But after retirement, it's usually once you stop working, but before you would take any pension or Social Security, if you can Social Security payments, if you can afford to do it, it makes good sense usually to roll some of that tax-deferred money into a Roth IRA, pay taxes on it, and then be done with it for the rest of your life.
Shiv, thanks very much for the call. Good luck. Larry in Appleton is with us now. Hi, Larry.
Hello. Question is, on 401k, I need to pull some money. I don't need, I'm only 66, but I want to take some money out of the 401k. And is there a way to avoid some of that taxes, or you need to pay taxes on all of that?
Yeah, technically, it is taxable as income, but if you go through your taxes, most Americans pay very little in federal income taxes. And are you married, Larry?
Yes.
You're married? Okay. Do you have a rough idea of what your, say, your gross income will be in 2014 between you and your wife?
I should. I have Social Security and a retirement plan. I'll say $35,000. I'm really not for sure.
Okay. That's good. And if most of that is Social Security technically is not taxable, but there's a formula that can determine if it is taxable as ordinary income. My guess is, Larry, is you can probably pull about $55,000 out of that retirement account. Even though it's technically taxable, you'll find that the tax bill is relatively small. You might pay maybe about, oh, probably $4,000 in state taxes and maybe another $5,000 to $6,000 in federal income taxes, even though your total gross income is going to be about $90,000. And the reason being, of course, is that you not only get deductions, standard deductions, you might get some itemized deductions, you get exemptions for the two of you. And then the first, federal income tax bracket is progressive, meaning the first batch of income is not taxed at all. The next batch is taxed at a low rate, and then the final batch in this case would be taxed at 15%. But it doesn't go, it's not retroactive to the dollar amount, so it won't go back and grab a bunch of that money. So I would say that, again, I'm just guessing here, you can probably take about $50,000 or more out of that retirement account, and you'll still pay very little in taxes. You want to stay below the top of the 15% federal income tax bracket, and that's the line 43. And for married couples filing jointly in 2014, it's $73,800. But again, that's on the back page of your tax return, so there are lots of other deductions that will be taken out from that gross distribution.
Thanks for the call, Larry. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is a special thank you for your support edition of On Your Money. As promised, we are devoting the entire hour to answering your questions, because we did indeed reach our pledge drive goal during our On Your Money broadcast during our winter pledge drive. More than reaching those goals, I think we more than doubled what was expected. Thank you so very much. Now, the airwaves are yours. What's your question for Kevin? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you for caring and helping us reach our goals in our winter membership drive. This is our, as promised, all questions answered edition of On Your Money. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is with us. Kevin is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC with offices in Madison and Eau Claire. Here's an email from Bill. Bill is a lawyer with a lot of student loan debt and an interesting dilemma. He wants to know, should he delay paying his loans off under the income-based repayment plan and instead build up a savings, retirement, and home buying account? Or should he pay the loans off as soon as possible, foregoing the rest of his goals? Boy, that's a big one.
Yes, and since Bill is a lawyer, would you mind just reading the disclaimer one more time so Bill understands the terms of our
relationship? You do not give personalized advice.
I am not a financial... Wait, I am a financial planner, but I'm not Bill's financial planner. Let's start with an explanation of the income-based repayment plan. These are for federal student loans, not private ones. And there's a website called ibrinfo.org that explains this. But it's based on your previous year's income and then the size of your family, et cetera. And what it allows you to do is reduce the payment that you owe below the minimum payment you currently have. As long as you make that payment, you will remain current on the debts and the repayment that they require, even as your income goes up or your family situation changes, can never exceed what you were originally going to be obligated to pay per month. But the interest can accrue after a certain period of time. However, as long as you make timely payments, meaning you stick to your end of the bargain, generally the balance can be forgiven up to 25 years down the road.
All right, not that you are giving a personalized investment advice to Lawyer Bill.
Furthest thing from it.
But what should someone in his situation do?
I would like to see someone in his situation kick that can further down the road, build up his savings so that he has at least 6 to 12 months of expenses set aside, then save for retirement. If things are going well for him, I'd like him to use a pre-tax retirement plan at work like a 401k, save on taxes, and get the employer match if it's there. But if things are a little tight and he's not making much money, then use a Roth IRA. He won't get a tax break on the contribution, but he can pull that contribution back out at any time for any reason whatsoever with no taxes or penalties at all. And that allows him to save for retirement and other future goals, but not have to worry about, oh gosh, if I sock this aside, it's going to clobber me if I need to get it back out in an emergency.
But what about all of the interest that's accruing on the student loans?
That obviously can be troubling, especially if you sign one of those documents when you borrow money that says, hey, congratulations, you win, here's the loan, and oh, by the way, this is the several trillion dollars you're going to be paying in interest over the time if you make the minimum payments. But that interest is not as troubling to me as a lack of liquidity, meaning even if he had the money to pay down the loans very quickly, if he uses all that up, he doesn't have it set aside for retirement or for emergencies. And in many cases, if the interest on the loan is low enough, he would be better off putting money aside in a pre-tax retirement savings plan, meaning he'll save more money by deferring taxes than he would be by paying the interest off. And if he builds up his cash and, his balance in his Roth IRA, he can always pay those loans off early if he wants. You can slide it over. What's more likely is if he's going to be buying a house, that he'll want to keep that money set aside for a down payment and then talk to the lender well in advance. Even before he starts looking for a house, he should go to the lender and say, this is my situation. Were I to apply for a mortgage today, what would you say? And what can I do between now and when I actually do buy a house to improve my situation, make it more likely that I get the loan that I want? Sometimes they might say, well, you really should whittle down these student loans. Other times they say, no, you're better off keeping those out there and making sure you have enough of a down payment to increase the equity in the home.
If you would like to email a question to Kevin, it's onyourmoney@wpr.org. We might get to it today. Maybe we'll get to it in a future On Your Money email bag segment. You can also call 1-800-642-1234. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and this is On Your Money. And our next caller is Kathy in Madison. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
We have two teenagers, and we'd like to start IRAs for them, and I'm wondering what the considerations are.
So your teenagers want to start their own IRAs, Kathy?
Kathy wants to...
The 18-year-old is very interested, yes.
Okay.
The 15-year-old, not so much, but...
If the 18-year-old wants to do it, that's actually enough. If they're just even interested, that's such a great step on the road to financial security that just the thought counts. Do they have earned income of any kind, Kathy?
I'm not sure what the answer to that is. The 15-year-old clearly does not. The 18-year-old, I've got some scholarships, and I don't know if those count. That would be the only possible source.
Okay, that's great news that the 18-year-old got some scholarship. The bad news is you cannot use scholarship money as the basis for which to make a contribution to a Roth IRA or an IRA. So the kids have to get some kind of a job, a real job with a legitimate pay, for you to make a contribution to a Roth IRA. You should use Roth IRAs for them, by the way, not IRAs, because they're not going to be taxed very high. Therefore, it's better to just use the Roth IRA, forego any tax break you might get, but then down the road it's going to be tax-free when they're hopefully in a much higher tax bracket. Another way people can get around this, if you say, geez, I'd like to open up some kind of account for a kid, you might want to look at maybe a low-cost variable annuity for the kids, because you do not need to make a contribution. They do not need to have earnings for you to put money into a variable annuity for them, yet the earnings still are sheltered from taxation. They will pay taxes on it in retirement. And then also, grandparents can make grandchildren beneficiaries of Roth IRAs. And then when the grandparents pass away, if there is any money left over in the accounts, the kids can get it and pull it out as they see fit, or over the kids' long life expectancy. So that's one way around it. But otherwise, you might tell them to say, hey, this is a good reason to go get a part-time job. And if you do, I'll make the contributions to the Roth IRA for you, and you can keep your earnings, which is perfectly legitimate.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure. No, you just did.
But I sent a contribution last week.
All right, good. You're back in. Go ahead, Kathy.
Excellent. So the 18-year-old is pursuing summer work right now.
Mm-hmm.
If he earns, say, $1,000 in the summer, mm-hmm. is that the limit of what could be contributed to a
Correct.
Roth IRA?
Correct.
Okay.
It's the lesser of his earnings, or $5,500. Again, the good news, though, he can keep that money. And if you want, you can put $1,000 into a Roth IRA of your money for him. The bad news is it becomes his money to do whatever he wants with it. But it generally, at least on the financial aid system, it won't preclude any need-based financial aid if it's in a retirement account in his name.
Good luck, Kathy, to you and your teens. Let's go to Carla in Appleton next. Hello, Carla.
Good morning. I'm calling as a parent also, like the previous caller. My 11-year-old son is a competitive Pokemon player, and he did well. He received a 1099 MISC. So I'm wondering what to do with that.
First of all, for all the kids who are listening out there, this is the dream.
Yes.
I can get totally involved in this complete waste of time and make more money than I could get babysitting. So, and I'm actually glad to hear that there was a 1099, because yes. it means that it was a legitimate payment, and they're ascribing to the laws that they have to make sure that the money is taxed appropriately. Can you tell us how much it was, Carla?
I can, and none of it was cash. About 550 represented prizes, and about 5,400 was travel awards so that he could compete nationally and internationally.
Okay. And how old is he?
He's 12 now. He was 11 during the competition.
That's fantastic.
And so he won this money by being good at the game. They were tournaments.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the bad news is though that those winnings are taxable as income. At his age, you do have to file a tax return form for that. Do you do your own taxes, Carla, or do you have someone do it for you?
I use TurboTax.
Okay. And what did TurboTax tell you when you inputted this data?
Well, I did TurboTax for my own. I haven't completed his yet.
Okay.
What I'm not sure is to claim this as earned or unearned, because it's not a lottery. He didn't get it necessarily as a prize. He did earn it.
It's skill. Mm-hmm. No, it's definitely skill. And I would defer to the good program TurboTax or to tax experts out there. My guess is, though, there actually is a really important distinction between lotteries and, say, like this would probably count as a skill, game of skill, and winning's no different than he won, you know, a tennis tournament or something like that. So I would say that that it would count as earned income, and do the return for him on TurboTax. pay the extra, I think it's a $10 or $20 extra surcharge you have to pay for another return. But do that and then put it in. And you're going to pay some taxes on it. The worst thing that can happen is you're audited and they say, how did you arrive at this conclusion for this? And you'll say, this is how I did it. And they'll either say, oh, you're right. Or they'll say, no, you're wrong. And you therefore owe a little bit more in taxes than what you've already paid. It won't be a significant amount of money. But it's still something that you should definitely attend to.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carla, for the call. Really, that is something. Let's go to Sue in Madison now. Hi, Sue.
Hi, Joy and Kevin. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question actually on the other end of the life spectrum is about my parents rather than my children. My folks are in their 80s, and about 12 years ago, they put all of their assets into an annuity, which then was paying them out 10% each year. Well, they're now in that category of having outlived their money, like a current commercial that's going on. And mm-hmm. so my siblings and I have been trying to talk them into cashing out this annuity so that they actually have control of their funds for however many years they have left. But they are resistant to that, feeling that they're going to pay some fines and sort of don't want to go back on thinking they made a wrong decision to do it in the first place. And I'm curious whether there's any general rule of, you know, at what point does it make sense to maybe cash in an annuity and get full access to your own assets rather than having it pay out in a limited way every year.
First, Sue, before you cash in the annuity, have they considered playing Pokemon?
Yeah. No.
Okay. All right. It's always a good to have a backup plan in case. If you're going to look at cashing in the annuity, there's a very good chance that all of the earnings that are left in the annuity above and beyond the original deposit amount will be taxed as ordinary income. And if it's a substantial amount, they'll pay a substantial amount of taxes. And for that reason, your parents' instinct about taking, you know, they're not taking this out on an automatic basis. It's at their discretion, right?
Well, they're getting a 10% disbursement each year.
Okay,
and
was that
as the amount has gone down, that disbursement is less and less. So they're struggling with making expenses. And then periodically, like recently, they had to put in a new furnace in their home.
Right.
They ended up taking a lump sum out and paying significant fees and penalties for that.
Yeah, and that's the other issue with annuities, especially ones that are sold by a salesperson, is very rarely are there initial sales charges to annuities. Where they get you is when you pull the money out. No one goes into an annuity saying, oh, I'm going to need this money in 6 months. They go, no, I'm going to use it forever. But any new money incurs a new surrender charge schedule on that deposit that typically starts out at about 7 or 8% and then slowly dwindles down to zero over 12 or 15 years in some cases, but usually around 7 years or so. And the reason they do that is the insurance company pays the salesperson a big chunk of money when your parents put that money into it as a commission charge. And then the insurance company basically pulls money out of your parents' account to pay off the money they borrowed to pay the insurance person. And if you pull the money out, obviously they can't borrow from it in the future, so that's what the surrender charge usually goes for. I think you're okay pulling the money out, but just keep the tax bill low and then ask the insurance provider, either the company or the salesperson, to say, if we pull this money out, what kind of penalties can we expect? And then also, is there a way to mitigate it? I mean, can we pull in, you know, some annuity, some part of the annuity out now and designate that as a previous deposit so that we don't get clobbered on the penalties as well? But I would be very cautious if they've already paid significant taxes on top of it for a small amount before. Be very careful about pulling a big lump sum out now, because that will obviously kick them up into a much higher tax bracket if it's over and above their normal income. What you might want to look at doing is, again, just pulling out enough from the annuity to stay below the top of the 15% federal income tax bracket.
Sue, thanks very much and good luck to you. Well, Kevin, what's the website of the week?
Well, we talked about finding banks, looking for calculators on retirement. Bankrate.com is one of my favorite websites. It's an ad-supported website, but the ads are fairly innocuous. And Bankrate.com not only has all those different calculators, some very good articles, but they have a program called Safe and Sound, which they rate every bank and credit union based on their balance sheet and their safety. So if you are concerned about putting money into an unfamiliar institution, go to Bankrate, look at their Safe and Sound program, and you can check out the institution strength there, and we'll have that link up at onyourmoney.com later on today.
And time for four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. With us every week at this time for information and advice on your money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.